this brings us sort of up to date with your work on Dedication.
Uh-huh.
And so where did you draw your inspiration for the film Dedication?
That, you know, it was such a delight. The story goes like this. I guess it was a summer ago, maybe. I went to see Radiohead in concert here in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And quite atypically for me, I turned up early for the show, and there was a wonderful support act called Deerhoof playing. I didn't know their music at all, but the fact that they were supporting Deerhoof was enough of a recommendation to stay in. The fact they were supporting Radiohead, I should say, was enough of a recommendation to stay around and listen. They were absolutely captivating. You know, they had an energy and an intelligence and an originality that, you know, was absolutely refreshing. And I turned to my wife and I said, somebody should do a film school with these guys. So fast forward probably a week, maybe 10 days, I had a call from a very dear friend, Tracy McKnight, who was music supervising this film, Dedication. And, you know, she began with, a usual bunch of, you know, caveats. They have no money, the resources are minimal, but she wanted to send the film to me because it was just a very exciting project. So I received the DVD, put it on, and as luck would have it, they had temped with a lot of Deerhoof. So I had a conversation with Justin Theroux, the director, and I think I was probably one of the only people that had seen the film that knew who he was excited about musically. So that got us off to exactly the right start. And one of the first things I said to him was, where it's working, I don't see any reason to change where you're at already. And, you know, let's just combine forces, and, you know, I'll write where it's appropriate for me, keep the Deerhoof where that's working, and where we need to have a hybrid, let's get them in the studio and make some new music, because most of the music that he'd used came from existing records of theirs.
Okay.
You know, I created my stuff on my laptop just using electronic stuff, and then, you know, when the time was right, Deerhoof came to LA, and we spent a day in the studio just playing around and making cues and having fun, and, you know, it was just a really great, you know, group of people to be working with, and you know, just a great confluence of coincidence.
Okay, so now when working with a group like Deerhoof, how important is the collaborative process to you?
I mean, it's actually not something that I get a chance to do terribly often, but it's great fun because in a way, you know, my role becomes much less. When you have the band in the studio, you know, what the one thing that you want to retain is the character of the band. Mm. So you don't want to insert yourself so far into the process that suddenly they stop becoming Deerhoof and start becoming, you know, another entity entirely, you know, a bunch of session musicians or what have you. So, you know, you're really playing the role of producer for the band to a certain extent. And, you know, kind of just guiding them through what needs to be happening dramatically, but at the same time letting them do what comes naturally to them.
Hmm. So now one of the first cues that I heard off the Dedication was the Christmas theme.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't write that during Christmas, did you?
No, I think we did the whole thing in the height of summer.
So is it hard to get in the Christmas spirit when it's the height of summer?
Well, fortunately, you know, in a film like Dedication, although it is Christmas, it's not a Christmas that any of us have ever experienced, and it was more about, you know, the character and this crazy cartoon character that these guys had come up with. My good friend George Clinton, you know, has kind of become the king of Christmas movies. You know, I think he's done, you know, the last couple of Santa Claus movies, and mm-hmm. You know, he always has to write those in the middle of summer, and apparently he decorates his whole studio with Christmas lights and puts Christmas trees in and just does whatever he can to get himself into the spirit.
All right, well, now as a composer, your job is of course to write music.
Mm-hmm.
But do you use silence as a composing tool?
Good question. Yeah, I think you use whatever comes to hand, and silence and you know, the contrast of timbre and tessitura, that, you know, they're all tools that, you know, hopefully suggest themselves at the right time. it's one of those things that, you know, typically, you know, you're working with in conjunction with a director, and, you know, there are some directors who want lots and lots and lots and lots of music and feel that's what the film needs. That there are some who want as little as possible. You know, it really just comes from the language and the syntax of the individual film.
Films are constantly changing. Like, mm-hmm. you'll get one cut, you'll get another cut. How do you keep your musical vision in a constantly changing product?
That's a good question. Most of it has to do, you know, it depends on what the language of the score is. If it's a very melodically driven or thematically driven score, then you can always refer back to your you know, the original clay, as it were. And, you know, if I'm scratching my head how to approach a scene, I'll refer back to one of my themes and, you know, just see if there's a different way of interpreting that music. And generally, something will suggest itself out of one of those themes, and you know, the crisis will be averted. You know, there's a great series of cards which I don't know if you're aware of, but it's something that occasionally I'll consult. This was a project that Brian Eno started in the 70s with a collaborator of his called Peter Schmidt, and they're called Oblique Strategies. And what he did was, and this is a tool that he wanted to use in the studio when working with bands, he wrote a series of instructions on blank playing cards. And some of the instructions would be fairly specific. They would be things like erase the bass guitar, or don't listen to the drums, or, you know, play something backwards. Something very, very specific. But some of the instructions would be fairly open to interpretation, and, you know, they could be a suggestion of, you know, a color, or, you know, the sound of crickets in the evening, or go outside and have a cup of tea, or they may be a question. And each of these cards, each of these ideas are just meant to kind of subvert the creative process, because we all have comfortable and well set, well-trod paths that we're familiar with, and I think what he was trying to do was just to kind of nudge people off the beaten path, as it were. So occasionally, I'll, you know, if I'm a little lost, I'll consult Oblique Strategies, and there may be an idea that suggests itself from there that I can use.
Okay, so do you use Oblique Strategies for, let's say, writer's block as well?
That's really, you know, everybody that I know that uses them in a different way. You know, some people use them on a very regular basis, and some people just when there's a crisis that needs to be averted. I've had friends who run factories, you know, clothing factories, who've used them in kind of industrial context. You know, it's an amazing resource and a very ingenious and brilliant idea.
Okay, well, how would a score that you write today differ from one that you wrote at the beginning of your career?
That's a very interesting question. I think at the beginning of anybody's career, you know, there's energy and passion and inexperience, and sometimes that inexperience can take you down paths that you wouldn't necessarily think of doing as your career progresses. Sometimes I miss that inexperience and the sense that anything is possible. You know, if I've traded anything, you know, I think the one thing that's changed most in the 10 years or so that I've been working has been the technology and the demands that technology places on the composer these days, and sometimes the limitations that it presents. You know, directors and producers these days want to hear very, very polished, finished demos. And a lot of time that I spend these days is less about the creative side and more about the kind of the programming side and trying to make pieces of music that sound like the finished product. And you know, that's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. So now that Dedication is finished, what does the future hold for you?
I'm just finishing a film called Passengers.
Okay.
That my friend Rodrigo Garcia has directed, and it stars Anne Hathaway. and is a beautiful supernatural romance stroke thriller. So we're just in the final process of putting that to bed. I'm recording a score called The Other Boleyn Girl. Mm-hmm. With Natalie Portman and Scarlett Johansson. If I can fit them in before the end of the year, there's a wonderful project called Righteous Kill that Robert De Niro and Al Pacino are collaborating on, which will be very exciting. And a comedy with Martin Lawrence called College Road Trip. So I have a lot on my plate right now.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the time you've given me today.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. And just hope your career continues on the incredible path that has been set for it.
That's very kind of you, and thank you for asking such insightful questions.
Oh, thank you.